Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
If we start here with the U.S. balance sheet on cotton.
USDA chief economist Seth Meyer looking at the balance sheet for cotton in the latest WASDE.
You know, a little bit of a change in production given some downward adjustments in yield. You know, we went from 840 pounds an acre to 807 pounds an acre. So we lost 33 pounds an acre based on NASA's latest reporting. That's about 600,000 bales. We largely expect that to come out of ending stocks, but no adjustment on prices. We've seen prices, we've moved prices on cotton lower pretty consistently over the last several months.
This is Agriculture Today.
USDA releases their crop production report for September on Thursday. Corn production for grain forecast at 15.2 billion bushels. That's up 1%, less than 1% from the previous forecast, but down 1% from last year. Based on conditions as of September 1st, yields expected to average 183.6 bushels per harvested acre. It's up a half a bushel from the previous forecast and 6.3 bushels from last year. Area harvested for grain forecast 82.7 million acres. It's unchanged from the previous forecast, but down 4% from last year. Soybean production for beans forecast a record high, 4.59 billion bushels. It's down slightly from the previous forecast, but up 10% from 2023. Based on conditions as of September 1st, yields are expected to average a record high, 53.2 bushels per acre. It's unchanged from the previous forecast, but still 2.6 bushels higher than last year. Area harvested for beans in the U.S. forecast at 86.3 million acres. It's unchanged from the previous forecast, but up 5% from last year. All cotton production forecast at 14.5 million bales. That's down 4% from the previous forecast, but up still 20% from 2023. This is based on conditions as of the 1st of September, and yields expected to average 807 pounds per harvested acre. That's down 33 pounds from the previous forecast, and 92 pounds less than last year. Upland cotton production forecast at 14 million bales, down 4% from the previous forecast, but 19% higher than last year. Pima forecast 547,000 bales. It's down 1% from the previous forecast, but 73% higher than last year. All cotton area harvested forecast at 8.63 million acres. It's up slightly from the previous forecast, 34% higher than last year. All cotton planted area totaling 11.2 million acres. It's up slightly from the previous forecast and up 9% from 2023. USDA also releasing their World Ag Supply Demand, or WASDE, estimates. Global wheat outlook is for larger supplies, consumption, trade, and ending stocks. Supplies projected to increase 1.5 million tons to 1,062,000,000 as higher beginning stocks more than offset lower production. And what about the coarse grains? 24-25 U.S. corn outlook, smaller supplies, and a modest decline in ending stocks. Projected ending stocks are 55 million bushels lower based on increases in exports and corn used for ethanol. For soybeans, U.S. supply and use changes include lower beginning stocks, production, and ending stocks. The lower beginning stocks reflect a slight increase to crush. Production projected down 3 million bushels. Crush and exports are unchanged. Ending stocks are projected 550 million bushels, down 10 million from last month. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The first challenge is, how do you acquaint people with the understanding that under current law, when the trust fund goes insolvent in 8 years, under law, there will be a decrease in benefits to match the income. Here's the income, here's the outgo, and right now the trust fund is making up the difference.
Louisiana Senator Dr. Bill Cassidy on the Social Security Trust Fund going broke within 10 years.
And the trust fund is shrinking. At which point, outgo, which means the benefits people are receiving, decreases to the amount of income. That will be a 24% cut. I'm on a radio program in Shreveport, and the hostess says, well, that's okay, I'll be grandfathered in or grandmothered in. I say, no. Mm-mm. People who are currently receiving will see that 24% cut. Now, what makes it worse, Lisa, is that apparently if you're running for president, you have to deny there's a problem. Mm-hmm. If you're running for president, you can't tell people there's going to be a 24% cut. You have to tell them that there's no problem whatsoever, and don't worry, I'll protect your social. Doing nothing is endorsing a 24% cut for people currently receiving and those who will receive in the future. That's the biggest challenge.
But why is the system broken?
The Social Security Trust Fund takes the money that we pay into it, and by law, it keeps it either in cash or it puts it into treasuries. That's the Social Security Trust Fund. Now, that is the absolute worst investment you could possibly have right now. The inflation, the interest rate we're getting on those treasury notes could be 1%, 2%, 4%, but inflation is 6 to 7%. We are losing value on the cash and treasuries that are in the Social Security Trust Fund. By law, we're losing that value. Anyone who's in a 401k, anyone who's in a defined pension fund, your fund doesn't do that. If you're a Canadian, your fund doesn't do it. If you're a European, your fund doesn't do it. The only fund that does it is the Social Security Fund. So what we do is we create a separate fund. We don't mix the two. There's no social dollars coming to our separate fund. And in our separate fund, we get $1.5 trillion. You mentioned we borrow. We could sell off government assets. There's a lot of empty buildings that we pay to maintain that we never use. So we could sell, but we raise $1.5 trillion, and we put it into this different fund, the Save and Secure It Fund. And as we do that, we invest it in the strength of the American economy. And so we could put it in the stock market, for example. Now, at the same time, we repeal the law that would cut benefits by 24%. We repeal that law. In the interim, we do borrow to pay scheduled benefits. So the woman who was hosting me, Erin McCarty in Shreveport, and she's 65, she will not have to worry about not being grandfathered in. She will still get her scheduled benefits. But we use the money in this trust fund as it grows over time, invested in the nation's economy, to offset the borrowing. And as this grows, it ends up addressing 70% of the shortfall associated with our promised benefits. There's still 30%, by the way, we have to address. And we have dials. That's why we need a president. He may want to turn this one, or she may want to turn that one. But the 70% is addressed with this, and all we're doing is what every other 401k, every other national pension fund does. We invest in the strength of the economy as opposed in treasuries, which are losing value every day.
This is Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
China is much more than just a mere competitor.
Former U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley.
Confronting China starts at home. We must systematically eliminate its interference and infiltration of our society. The situation is worse than most people realize. The Communist Party has abused our openness in extraordinary ways. It uses our economic freedom to threaten our security and food supplies, our academic freedom to corrupt our students and our scholars, and our freedom of speech to spread lies and shape our laws. China treats our homeland like its personal playground. In recent years, Chinese investors have bought nearly 400,000 acres of land in our country. That's twice the size of New York City. We aren't just talking about any old property. China has bought miles of farms near sensitive military facilities, and China has taken a majority control of agricultural industries. This must end. The line between Chinese investors and the Chinese Communist Party is exceptionally thin. The national security risk is too great. We must prevent China from buying more land and force it to sell what it already has. We need similar resolve in our higher education system. China has set up so-called Confucius Institutes that spread communist propaganda on our college campuses. When they get shut down, they quickly reopen under a different name. And China is giving hundreds of millions of dollars to our universities. This funding gives Beijing a foothold in the best research institutions in the world. It wants our research for its military. We should end this practice. We should ban all propaganda centers and eliminate federal funding for universities that take Chinese money. Universities must choose. You either take Chinese money or you take American money, but the days of taking both are over. It shouldn't be a hard decision. There are other steps we must take to protect our domestic institutions. Right now, the United States lets Chinese companies lobby our government. Yet Beijing ultimately controls those companies. These businesses are basically front groups for a foreign power. We should ban all lobbying from the Communist Party and Chinese companies and prevent former members of Congress and military leaders from helping lobby on China's behalf. Beijing should never be allowed to influence our laws. China is also behind the fentanyl crisis that's killing tens of thousands of Americans every year. Chinese companies make nearly all of the precursor chemicals that Mexican cartels turn into fentanyl. China cannot plead innocence here. It knows exactly what it's doing by putting these chemicals into the hands of the cartels. We've tried sanctions, but they're not working. We must ratchet up the pressure. As president, I will push Congress to revoke permanent normal trade relations until the flow of fentanyl ends. If China wants to start normal trade again, it will stop killing Americans.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
There should be no subjectivity or wiggle room for any bureaucrat to substitute their own biases or interpretations. But unfortunately, that's certainly not been the case with the Clean Water Act.
North Carolina Representative David Rauser, a chairman of the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee.
Now, there is no greater example of bureaucratic overreach than a nightmare complying with and understanding the definition of a water of the United States, or WOTUS as we call it. This definition determines the scope of jurisdictional waters under the Clean Water Act, affecting water quality certification programs, pollutant discharge permits, and oil spill prevention. Now, a good example of all this is in North Carolina, pharmaceutical company Novo Nordisk, a worldwide leader in treating and preventing a wide range of diseases, including diabetes, announced a $4 billion investment for a site expansion, bringing more than 1,000 jobs to the state. In October, they requested a jurisdictional determination, or JD as we call it, which never came. They were told to apply for a permit to modify it once a JD was issued. They have since applied for a permit without determination. However, the permit process, review process, can take more than a year. Novo Nordisk cannot conduct on-site avoidance and minimization analysis before they know what parcel of property must be avoided. Nor can they conduct an off-site alternatives analysis without a clear concept of how their site works against other sites that may or may not have similar issues. And this is just one example of many instances across the country where economic investment and job creation, and in this case, public health as well, are all stalled due to this vague process. The Supreme Court's ruling in Sackett versus EPA last year provided a decisive win for America's farmers, small businesses, and property owners. Yet despite the court's clarity, there remains a distinct incongruence between the ruling and the latest definition of a WOTUS from this administration, which has led to a new round of legal challenges and additional confusion. When Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works, Michael Connert, testified before the subcommittee last December, he reported a backlog of more than 4,000 jurisdictional determinations that need to be made. While the administration claims some progress has been made in approving these, the inconsistent and piecemeal approach it is taking in implementing its WOTUS rule is causing serious delays on a variety of different projects around the nation. Sackett struck down the significant nexus test and held that a WOTUS must have a continuous surface connection to traditional navigable waters. That ruling was over a year ago, and we just passed the one-year mark since the administration issued its revised rule. Farmers, home builders, businesses, manufacturers, and many other hardworking Americans rely on the Corps and EPA for predictable, workable, and stable WOTUS regulations. The administration has not yet delivered. So in summation, the administration's implementation is not in accordance with the Sackett ruling generally, nor is it consistent project to project where JDs have been issued. So I remain concerned about the lack of transparency and lack of consistency with which this revised definition has been implemented. We are all still waiting for clear and consistent guidance on which everyone can rely. The decision to approach WOTUS on site-specific basis without clear training and universal application has served only to muddy the waters, no pun intended, of a very clear and straightforward Supreme Court ruling. So I look forward to hearing from our witnesses today about their experiences and challenges with WOTUS implementation since the Sackett decision and what recommendations they have for us in Congress so we can work to provide surety to Americans who rely on clear implementation of this important rule.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Well, this is our 30th year, so we're...
John Kavalik is president of the U.S.-Cuba Trade and Economic Council. So who is the U.S.-Cuba Trade and Economic Council? What did they do?
You know, 3 decades, and we were created in 1993 and officially became the organization in 1994. Our mandate has been not as lobbyists. We don't take positions on U.S.-Cuba political relations. Our role has been information and analysis, assisting U.S. companies, and working with the Cuban government, the U.S. government, other governments, companies in other countries to not necessarily facilitate the commercial relationship, but make certain that everyone knows what they can do, what they can't do, and then it's up to them to decide what they want to do. So we've attempted to be an honest broker.
Part of what harmed the U.S.-Cuban relations was something known as Havana Syndrome.
It's incredibly difficult to get past because there hasn't been finality to it. It manifested, you know, the end of the Obama administration, into the Trump administration, and State Department employees, contractors, some intelligence assets were impacted by something. And then it spread to China, and it was found in other places, and the medical community did not have a cohesive message to it. And so it became politicized. And the fact that it started in Cuba and its name was Havana Syndrome, it was one of my worst nightmares when it was coined Havana Syndrome, because, you know, I remember having meetings and we're like, this is over. You know, now that they've connected it to Cuba, you know, God himself could come from the sky and say Cuba had nothing to do with it and it wouldn't matter, because the perception is Cuba could do it, would do it, and would allow others to do it. Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, whatever. So the narrative was really easy to steer in a negative way. And so, you know, what we did was certainly not to minimize it and, acknowledge that it was there and it would remain and it would, it'd be an impediment. And we've even seen it, you know, in the last weeks, rear again with more discussions. So it isn't the first drama that we've encountered in 30 years. One of the biggest, was 1996 with the shoot down of the brothers to the rescue plane. That created the Helms-Burton law, the Libertad Act. We can always count on the Cuban government to do something or say something that's going to derail a lot of well-intentioned work. Havana syndrome, though, is the one that has had now, nearing 8 years, where it's still, because it's unsettled in terms of who did it, why they did it. It sort of dangles out there as a political pinata.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I'm a firm believer in economic freedom, but it has long been recognized that not all trade with trading partners is the same.
Former U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley.
The father of capitalism, Adam Smith, wrote in The Wealth of Nations that Great Britain's interest in preserving naval supremacy was more important than free trade in the maritime sector. Defense, he wrote, is of much more importance than opulence. The challenge today is national security is affected by almost every part of our relationship with China. No one understands that better than the Chinese. They have desperately pursued American investment and innovation precisely to strengthen their military. American companies are banned from selling military hardware and services to China, but they still sell billions of dollars worth of goods to the Chinese market. We must look at these sales through a national security lens. Much of its military application simply slips through the cracks of U.S. law. But Chinese law requires U.S. companies to transfer technology to Chinese companies as part of the price of doing business on Chinese soil. This cannot continue. U.S. businesses must recognize the threats to themselves and to our American security. Beijing's focus on military fusion demands it. China already steals up to $600 billion of American intellectual property every year. Our loss is the Chinese military's gain. Advanced technology is especially important. Right now, our federal government keeps a detailed list of the most sensitive technologies that are dangerous to export. But it's not a blacklist. We still let companies send this tech to China. They just have to file the right application. It happens all the time. In 2022, the Biden administration approved 70% of licenses for exporting controlled technology to China. Think about that. We must end the export of sensitive technology to China, full stop. And we must keep China away from our biggest breakthroughs and cutting-edge companies. We know Beijing wants to beat America in artificial intelligence, quantum computing, and a host of other advanced technologies. We also know that American innovation is still the best in the world. The Communist Party knows that too. Their approach is basically, if you can't beat them, then buy them or steal it. We should block any Chinese purchase of an American company specializing in advanced technology. No more exports and no more acquisitions, period. For that matter, we should have no more investments that undermine America. China can't buy certain technologies from American companies. But Americans can still invest in Chinese companies developing those same technologies. Talk about a loophole. It's a massive one. By one estimate, U.S. portfolio investment in China rose $800 billion between 2017 and 2020 alone.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
In its new assessment of the corn crop, the USDA is projecting a 15.2 billion bushel crop.
It's a little bit bigger than perhaps the trade expected.
But just a little bit, USDA chief economist Seth Meyer says market prices for corn slipped down by a whole penny a bushel after USDA issued its report, which projected an average national yield number of 183.6 bushels an acre. And of course, farmers in many places may do much better than that.
You know, we're still talking record corn yields in Iowa, 212 bushels an acre across the entire state. Illinois, 222 bushels an acre. Indiana, 210 bushels an acre across the entire state, and Nebraska, 195 bushels average across the entire state. Those are all record yields across that strip of land there.
All combining to produce the second biggest corn crop ever. Gary Crawford, Washington.